really understanding what you're building and why you're building it is a huge issue. And your project manager kind of becomes a mediator because they aren't from one department or another department. They can sit in the middle and say, this is what's best for the project.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. Today's guest is coming to us from the land down under, from Australia. This is pretty exciting. First time we've ever had a guest from Australia before. But we're going to be having a conversation about change management, project management, all of those things. But before we do, I do want to ask you, if you haven't already, to subscribe. We have a brand new episode every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., and we don't want you to miss out on a single one. We have an audio version of the podcast as well as video. You can subscribe on YouTube or Facebook. Make sure you follow, subscribe, hit the like button. And then the audio version as well, you can find out more by subscribing on whatever platform you're listening on, or you can find a list of all of them by visiting lockdoc.net/podcast. Check that out. But we also would ask you, if this topic is something that would benefit somebody that you know, why not share this episode with them? As small business owners, as business leaders, implementing new processes in your organization oftentimes are very complicated. And a successful rollout of a new project or a new piece of technology in your organization can really be impactful, or it could be very detrimental. And understanding the benefits of change management and project management is vital. That's what we're going to be talking about today with Jana Axline from Project Genetics, and she's coming up right after this. So grab a cup of coffee and get ready for this conversation.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes, and it's time for a coffee break. It's time for a coffee break.
Jana, thank you for joining us today. I'm excited. One thing out of the gate, obviously, nobody would know this because they don't know yet, but you're in Australia right now. This is incredible. This is the farthest guest we've ever had, and you're in a totally different day from us right now. This is incredible.
I can see the future. I am living the future.
I'm living the future. So you're how many hours ahead of us? You told me you were... It's a lot of math.
It's like 16 hours ahead of mountain time, or 17 right now, because the U.S. just went through a time change, and Australia, Queensland, where I am, does not
recognize time change.
Yeah, daylight savings and all of that.
Oh, that's incredible. So this is pretty cool. We've had some guests from across the world before, some global international guests, but first from Australia. So thank you for joining us. And you said that you spend some of your time in Denver, Colorado, and some of your time in Australia, which are two completely identical places. But welcome.
Well, you need sun and you need the beach, right? There's no beach in Denver. So
That is very true. That is.
There's no snow in Australia. Well, there is somewhere, but not where I am.
Well, very cool. Well, thanks for joining us today. We're going to be talking about change management and kind of project management and how to manage the change with those things. That's going to be part of our topic, but we do have to get into rapid fire, five randomly selected questions with unknown point values just to get under your skin. And then we'll give you a score at the end. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, question number one. What is something that you saw recently that made you smile?
Oh, you know, I got to puppy sit. It was so cute. My neighbor brought over her puppy because she needed to go to work. And so I got to puppy sit, and he was just the cutest little thing.
Puppies. Puppies are really great until they turn into full-grown dogs. And then it's which I guess puppies can be a pain at some points too, but they are cute to play with, right?
Exactly.
It's just keeping up with them. Question number two, what is the first thing that you do in the morning?
I roll over and check my email. Shh, don't tell anyone.
That's the number one thing you're not supposed to do first thing in the morning.
But you got to understand, when I wake up, it's already noon in Denver. So I've already missed half the day.
That is a fact. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago. And they were talking about how it was kind of time control hacks, or, you know, trying to get in control of your day. And that was one of the things that they were talking about, especially with all of the technology on your personal device. Now you can set all these parameters to say, keep all these things away from me until certain points. But obviously you have to adapt. If you're 16 hours ahead of everybody else, you have to kind of know what's going on. So very cool. All right. Question number three. Now this is interesting, since you have a choice of many. What is the best season? If you could choose any of the season, what would the best one be?
Oh, it's fall. Fall in Denver, because I love the way the leaves change and fall, you know, fall to the ground. All the aspen trees up in the mountains. It's just the best time. And it gets a little cold, so you can have fires and, you know, cook s'mores and wear boots. so I love the fall.
There you go. Question number three, what is your biggest pet peeve?
My inefficiency. It drives me insane. So I hate traffic. I hate anything that is inefficient. It really gets under my skin, which is why I'm kind of good at helping companies become more efficient.
There you go. How about that? All right. Question number four, if you could give some advice to beginners in your work area, what would it be?
Always look for new opportunities to expand your interests, meaning, like, I volunteered. I wanted to get into project management, couldn't get into it, so I volunteered. And it was an amazing opportunity, because not only did it help me grow as a leader, it connected me to people who were project managers, so they could see who I was and what my skill set was. And that's actually what opened the door to my first project management job.
Very interesting advice. We're going to give you high scores for that. All right, question number five, last one. If you could buy any car right now, any car, you had your choice of any car in the world, what would it be?
Bugatti. Any car, it would be a Bugatti.
Bugatti. Those are really expensive.
Well, you said any car.
Well, no.
If you ask me what car I am buying, it's a Dodge Challenger. But if it's any car.
Well, what would draw you to a Bugatti?
Oh, how fast they go. Like, I mean, they're just the model, the body style of the car is sexy. Yeah. I mean, I don't know a lot about cars, but I know if they look cool and I know if they go fast.
You know a little bit about cars if you know what a Bugatti is. So a Tesla, though, Tesla Model S Plaid, you could beat that Bugatti.
Yeah, with the, Plaid speed.
There you go.
I heard about that. I've not gotten to ride in a Tesla yet. So I really want to experience that, because I heard it's pretty cool how it goes zero to whatever in like no time.
Yeah, it is definitely an incredible experience for sure. So just, it's like a roller coaster. But if you took a ride in one, you may change your mind on the Bugatti. Okay. All right. Okay. Good answers except for the last one, but we'll give you a score of 764. So congratulations on that. All right. Well, let's jump into
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm sure that blows it out of the water, right? Because it was out of like 500, right? So 764 out of 500.
That's exactly the way that our scoring system works. Exactly. Oh, man. All right, cool. So let's jump into the conversation about, I guess, some tips and tricks for project management, but really specifically change management, because I feel like, and I don't know, I'd be interested in your opinion on this as well. Implementing something in your business, any type of a project, saying, hey, we're going to implement this new piece of software that's going to manage our business, or we're going to be switching over this phone system, or whatever the case may be that you're implementing. I think one of the hurdles is, and we're dealing with it right now, phone system is kind of in my brain because we're getting ready to switch over to a different phone system. Checking all the boxes to say, is everybody trained on it? Do they know that we're moving over? When is the changeover date? What are the hurdles that we're going to hit? And then inevitably, when this happens in a week or two, when we make that change, somebody's going to walk in and go, oh, I didn't know what was going on. How do I do this, right? And it's a process of working through how do we get everybody on board with the change that is getting ready to happen, thus the change management. So from your perspective, is that the hardest part of the project management, is getting everybody involved with the change, or are there other elements that we're just not aware of?
There's probably two. that are the hardest. And change management is definitely difficult because companies usually don't think about it until the end when it's time to communicate. But really, you should be thinking about it at the beginning when you're talking to people and building awareness and buy-in. So that would definitely be, and we can talk about that more too if you're interested. But so that would definitely be a very challenging piece. And then the other piece is what I call the gulf of evaluation. Well, not what I call, what Agile calls the gulf of evaluation, which is where the business describes what they need. Like, we have this problem and we're looking to you to solve it. And technology thinks they understand. And so they're like, great. And they go off and they build it. And it's not, the business is like, that's not what I described. So it's this, the gulf between what the business thinks they're getting and what they actually get. And so that's actually one of the reasons why even the Agile discipline came around, was to solve for that problem. But really understanding what you're building and why you're building it is a huge issue.
We understand the frustrations HOA board members and property managers face when deciding the best solution for their HOA and pool security. Should we use a keypad, hand out keys, or install a key card system? Do we even need cameras? These are some of the questions that are difficult to navigate, and we're here to help. At LockDock Security, we've spent over 20 years working with homeowners associations and property managers to find a system that best fits the pool and HOA needs. Camera systems for the front gate or front entrance, key card systems for the pool gates, or simply updating the gate so that it meets safety and code compliance. We like to take the guesswork out of the process to answer any questions and help find the right solution. Our mission is to help you protect your people and your property, and that includes pools. Contact our team today to schedule your free consultation for your community. So jumping into this, a little base foundation, because you just unpacked a lot. Really, really cool. So this, I'm excited. Agile framework for accomplishing things versus waterfall. So can you give us a quick synopsis of the difference between those two and why it's important? Because, you know, a lot of businesses probably they operate in one of the two and maybe they're unaware of it. But give us a brief understanding of that.
So there's obviously a lot of nuances, but the quick one is that waterfall goes through and completes each phase until it gets to the end, meaning it'll say, hey, what do you want? Then it'll think of a house. Hey, what kind of house do you want? Let me design the house. Let me build the house. You know, we have a walkthrough and all the inspections, mm-hmm. and then you own the house. Mm-hmm. So it's very sequential. In Agile, it's about iterating. So it's about, like, if you couldn't really do this with the house, but it'd be like, let me build this room and make sure you like this room. And then I'll build the living room, and then I'll build the kitchen. And we'll just keep checking in with you along the way, mm-hmm. to make sure that we are on track and building the right thing and that you're getting the value expect. The key thing with Agile is actually really getting value sooner. So they try to slice projects in a way that you could go live. You could have a series of go lives so that the business can get immediate value. Because while a project's going on, until it gets implemented, there's no value. Mm-hmm. It's work in progress. So they're trying to reduce that work in progress. So one key thing is validating that they're making the right thing, and two, not having a lot of work in progress so you can get immediate value.
You're hitting on all these great terms that we have just been eating up around our organization. Work too much work in progress. So there was a book that we recently did called Make Work Visible, and it talks a lot about the process of, you know, having too much work in progress, having visibility of progression along the way, but also kind of bringing things through different phases of that project as a whole, right? And it's a big hiccup, because one of the other components, I would imagine, for managing change and project management is just having so much work in progress that nobody really knows what they're supposed to be working on, and then it just creates that level of chaos. So
but hopefully not with a project manager. Like, you should have it all documented. Everybody, regardless if you're waterfall or agile, like, things are documented and people should know what they're working on. Otherwise, you don't have an effective project manager.
There you go. So with the project manager in place, if you don't, then you're in a bit, yes, of a chaos. Okay. So the difference between the agile and waterfall, and a lot of companies are adapting this agile method where they can navigate iterate and iterate on the fly, make those changes and get real feedback as they're going, regardless if it's technology or you know, whatever you're trying to implement. It gives you a lot more ability to make sure that you're on track more regularly. So what are the things that you're seeing from an agile environment? And if nobody's aware of, if you're not completely aware of that, then there's lots of resources, I'm sure, that you can point people to be more mindful of that. But from an agile perspective, what are some of the rhythms that you've seen that are working or that are being very effective in those, I guess, check-ins or making sure that those iterations are on track?
Yeah, I'm finding a lot of companies are adopting hybrid agile. So they understand the value of you know, reducing cycle times so that they can get things live. But, you know, there's a lot of agile principles that they aren't adopting just because their infrastructure, and I mean people infrastructure, isn't able to support it. So some of the tools that they bring in that are really helpful is one, chunking up work into small iterations. So it's like, how can we have a complete package of work that we can sign off and the business is happy with? And you know, because the business moves fast. So, you know, on these long projects that take 2 years, you could find that at the end, the business has moved on and that, you know, you were expecting a certain ROI and it's half of that because the marketplace has changed. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is really the involvement of the business. Like, I really like it when we have a product owner, whether it's called a product owner or not, but that key person who is responsible for the solution on the business side. And so they are the single point of contact for making sure that everybody in the business that needs to have a say has a say, but then it gets all funneled down into this is the requirement. And then, you know, they pass it on to technology to build. You know, I think that works really well. The other thing that I think is really good is, from just the cadence and the drum, you know, we call it a drum beat, is daily standups. Like, I think everybody can, with a team, regardless if you're delivering technology or not, can implement daily standups because it just helps you align. It helps you be like, hey, what are you working on? What does your day look like? And then what roadblocks do you have? And, you know, and then as a leader, you can go and try to help remove those roadblocks. So I think that's something that that really anybody can leverage.
So you just kind of gave a couple of highlights because I was going to ask you, what are some key things that should be involved in daily standups? Because I think a lot of times, you know, when you start to have these conversations about adding more meetings or daily standups, there's a one side of the coin that people are like, yeah, we need to have more conversation and get this. And then the other people are like, oh my God, not another meeting that I have to go to. So what are some of those? You just kind of highlighted some of them, but you want to break those down or maybe highlight them even more of the key attributes that work well in daily standups.
Yeah. So the reason that it's called a standup is because everybody is supposed to be standing up. And the reason for that is so that it doesn't drag on and that you don't end up with a half an hour, an hour long meeting. So I've even seen some teams do daily standups now doing planks. Because then it makes it a really short meeting.
that's a great idea. Planks for the stand-up.
But you're just supposed to answer three questions. What I did yesterday, what am I doing today, and what roadblocks do I have? It's not a meeting where you're going and solving problems and really trying to get into the solutioning. And so, you know, if somebody comes in and says, here's what I'm doing today, and somebody else wants to have a conversation about that, well, then they need to go off and have a discussion after stand-up about it. That way that not everybody is being involved in the meet, you know, tying up everybody's time. Mm-hmm. So it really should be that simple. And, you know, it has a lot of value because if, you know, if we're on the same team and I, you know, sometimes I depend on you for things, but I find out that maybe you're doing an audit today. Now I know that your whole day is booked with that audit and the likelihood of me getting whatever it is that I hope to get, I won't. And so now I can go into my day aware of that. You know, and it gives opportunities, like I already said, for a leader to be able to remove roadblocks or if you're really struggling with something and you mention that, then maybe somebody else has insight on how to help you. But without that communication or a forum to do that, that might never come up and you might spend 2 or 3 hours solving something that could be solved in 15 minutes.
That's a good point, and especially the idea of the planks. I will have to implement that. We may it may be detrimental to a point, but no, having a good clean framework on those types of things, we've tried to address it from kind of what are your priorities today, what's your team accomplishing today, and what do you need help with? And I think it's kind of similar to what you're laying out there. And it's given us, I can tell you from the way we've implemented it, given us a lot of clarity on exactly that. Hey, you either have somebody that's going to be tied up in an all-day event or an all-day process, or you have two people that are actually working on the same thing simultaneously, and you can avoid that at the beginning of the day versus realizing it half a day in. So very cool. Okay. So daily stand-ups, a big part of that and a value that people can have. And I would imagine that especially through whatever project that you're working on. So you were talking about having a product owner, somebody that is really understanding the need of the business and then being able to kind of be that liaison or that spokesperson for the outside vendors or outside connection points. Is that kind of, or maybe even it's internal, but you just one person that's kind of leading the charge?
Yeah, it's the person who's supplying the vision and the priority as well, right? So they're the ones who are supposed to understand which pieces are going to add value to the business, you know, and add the most value and prioritize that so that you're realizing value quicker. But yeah, they're that one voice who understands the requirement, but understands how that requirement ties to the vision and where that falls in a priority perspective.
Now, is that something that you do from an outside perspective, or is that you're saying that somebody inside the business needs to own that?
Well, you can definitely hire a consultant or contractor to be a product owner. But ideally, you would want them to be in your business, I would say, because now they're the one who's really driving what your solution is.
So when it comes to, and I'm trying to think from a small business perspective, because that's kind of where we are. And I might imagine there's folks that are listening that are in small business, or maybe even in a small subset of a larger business that are paying, you know, that are listening to this. When does it call for an outside consultant, or when do you bring in outside project management to help with this versus just trying to handle it inside?
The areas we see most frequently is when the complexity is beyond what your maturity level is in that space. So you might be, you know, rock stars at whatever your core business is, but you're not rock stars at implementing a CRM or an ERP or an HR system or whatever. Like, that's just not something that you do every day, right? Like, so we had a client who we were helping, they were moving their ERP to the cloud, right? And they have a big technology department, but it had been 20 years since the ERP had been implemented. So they didn't have that level of, you know, their project managers and even their technology team just didn't have that maturity in that type of project. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's not a negative thing. Why have people like that on your team if you're not doing it every year? Mm-hmm. And so that would be one instance. The other instance is just purely a capacity perspective. So sometimes you take on these projects and it's going to, you're going to need more support, but it's only going to be for 6 months or something. So why bring on a new person that you may not have enough work for them to do 6 months from now. So that would be another one. And the other one that I find is, and this is less of a small business, but it would be more for the bigger businesses, is when you have highly political type environments or environments where you have a vendor and you want somebody to come and sit in the middle, and your project manager kind of becomes a mediator because they aren't from one department or another department. They can sit in the middle and say, this is what's best for the project.
Sure.
And so those would be the examples that I've seen.
Now that's a valid point. When you bring somebody in from a certain department to try to run that project, they could have some predisposed perspective that this is the way it should go because this is what's going to benefit us the most, and really kind of be blinded to some of the areas of the other departments that need to be taken into consideration. I know we've run into that in our organization at times where we come up with this great plan and this great strategy, and then we forget about this one department. And it's like, ah, they'll be fine. And so making sure that somebody's coming in and saying, have we checked all the boxes for every single department and how this is going to impact them?
Yeah. And that's really where change management even comes to play, right? That you were talking about. Yeah.
Can you copy this key? That's a question we get asked about 3,422 times a year. And how can you actually be sure that the person who asked that question is supposed to get a copy of that key? Well, we think you should always know who can copy your keys to your business and your home, because it could be your neighbor, an old employee, a contractor, or even worse, your mother-in-law. At LockDock Security, we believe in protected key systems, so you always know who has a copy of your key. To find out more, visit LockDock.net or stop by our Charlotte location. LockDock Security, helping you protect your people and your property. Moving into that conversation around change management, because this is something that I'm interested in, again, a bit selfishly, because these are some areas that we struggle with at times. So we have an idea. So let's say, for instance, and again, just for an example, our phone system. We are currently using one voice over IP system, and we're going to switch over to another voice over IP system, mostly because it just seems like it'd be something fun to do right now, and we don't have a whole lot going on. So we decided that that's going to be the case. So we've done the research, and we had a team kind of come together to figure out what's going to work, what solution we're going to go with, make that choice. So that part was done. Now we're into the phase of implementation of one system and basically breaking down an old system and doing away with it. At what point do you start to bring the entire organization on, or to start to make everyone aware of that process change? Because that seemingly is the hiccup that I think we've come into play in the past, and maybe some of the other businesses that I've talked to, is at what point do you bring everybody on board with this change and make them aware of how it's going to impact them? Because it's almost like, and I know this is a long question, so I guess I'm giving some background from our perspective. If you bring it on up too early, then people don't find interest in it because it's not going to impact them just yet. If you bring it on too late, then everybody's stressed because the change is happening, and then they're not aware, they can't make adjustment in time. So how do you start to plan for a big change like that? And what is the appropriate time frame to bring people into position to understand what they need to do for the change? That was the long question.
I would challenge that there isn't a too early. In that, I would do change management starts towards the very beginning of the project. In that, maybe at first it's the department heads you pull in, and you understand how all those department heads use the phone system. How much are they on the phone system? What kind of functions do they use on the phone system? What do they really like about the phone system? And then you can make sure that then when you evaluate the new one, you do a gap analysis. All right, well, were there things that they liked about this that now they're not going to like, or et cetera? And you figure out what are all the differences between them. And then you start going back and you start talking to people about those differences and what impact is this going to have on you? And then you help them manage through that change. So, it starts with awareness of, hey, this project is going on. Here's the change we're undertaking. It may start at kind of more at a department head level, but then you need to move down, because what's going to happen is you're inevitably going to get to the end, if you haven't done any communication, and find out that somebody uses some functionality on the phone and it's going to be gone. And now you've created a problem because that one person has, maybe they're your customer service person, mm-hmm. And they've got this critical role, and you didn't realize that this functionality was important for them. And that's when people get resentful, right? When they get resentful of change, when you don't spend time to understand whether or not they want the change. So, and that's where, like, somebody like me, I struggle with change management, because I'm one of those people who's like, well, it's just what's happening, so we should just all do it. Whether it's, the change is happening to me, or I'm imposing the change on someone else. But in both instances, I'm like, well, it's the change, and so we just all do it. And so that's why I hire change managers, because I understand that it's important that that somebody will go alongside the people and be like, hey, how do you feel about this change? What does it mean to you? You know, you talk about efficiency, and to me, it feels so inefficient, but it's actually not true. My visceral reaction is, this is so inefficient. I don't want to go talk to these people. I just want to get this done. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, the adoption's better. So it ends up becoming more effective. Maybe not, I don't know if it's more efficient, but it definitely becomes more effective, and you have you get more adoption, which is what you want.
Absolutely. And I think maybe what you're saying on that too is the changes or the decisions already been made. So let's just get on board and move on with it. But I think one of the hard lessons I've learned throughout the years is come up with a great idea, or what you think is a great idea. You have well baked on it for many, many weeks, many, many months, and gone through all this process, and you're full on board with it. And then you walk in and say, this is what we're going to do, and let's go. And no one else has had that luxury of understanding the reason why we're making the change or kind of coming on board with that process. And so, you know, kind of to your point, the necessity of that change management is to kind of slow it down and have somebody go, okay, here's why the change is happening. Here's the reason that we're seeing it, and here's the impact we're hoping for it. What is your take on it? And you kind of walk through that together versus just the walk in and say, this is what's going to happen. Get used to it and get with it. And then everybody is kind of reeling with the why. Why are we changing this? It's been working perfectly fine, you know? So that is, I guess, a valid point. And maybe to your point of the change management side is, if you don't do that, you're going to lose so much time on the back end, because people are just melting down with, this was not necessary.
Absolutely. Yeah. What you find is that you spend a lot more time than trying to shore up. I mean, a phone system's a little different, but when we're talking about other solutions, shoring up the workarounds and things like that, so that you get everybody actually using the solution instead of trying to, you know, send their Excel document or something instead of using their Salesforce, you know, like trying to prevent those. So if you don't do that up front, that's what you'll spend your time on the backside doing.
Have you been in our business? No, that's a very valid point. People will find there's a buddy of mine in San Diego, California that says this quite frequently, and I think it's written on the wall in the studio. Make it easy to do the right thing and difficult to do the wrong thing. And oftentimes, if you don't implement good change management, you're making it easy for people to do the wrong thing, i.e. use the Excel document instead of using Salesforce. And then you have really wasted a lot of resources and dollars for no reason.
Well, and that's, you know, sales is a perfect example of where we don't spend enough time understanding how people do their job and what's important to them. You know, we want Salesforce because we want visibility into what our pipeline is and make sure we're organized and we're not leaving any deals on the table, et cetera. Well, a salesperson just wants to close the next deal. Mm-hmm. And so if you put too many obstacles into closing the next deal, too many clicks, too many required fields, they're not going to use it, no matter how much you convince them that it's the right thing to do. So, you know, sometimes it's even a matter of, well, what resourcing change do we need here? Do we need a sales assistant who can go in and do all the admin? Because we require a lot more documentation than these salespeople really are willing to do. So, you know, it's that type of analysis, right? Like, there's no one right answer there, but each company needs to take the time to look at that. Otherwise, yeah, they'll have people who maybe they just put the client and the dollar amount in there, but they don't put all their notes in there. Mm-hmm. So how do you make it as easy as possible for them to do their job?
So a big takeaway that I'm walking away from this conversation today is that oftentimes we short sight a change in our organization, or maybe implementing a new process or implementing a new piece of software or new technology or whatever, without completely understanding how it's going to impact all elements of our business. And so step one is to really step back and say, what is the current process and how is this change going to impact that process? So with that, I want to talk a little bit about your organization and how if I understand everything that we just talked about, how you help with that process.
Yeah. So, well, we come in, usually companies bring, when you ask us, when do you bring in consultants? So that's usually when we get brought in, right? Complex projects, not enough capacity, failing projects, or highly political, or M&A, like merger acquisition, you know, another great example. And so they come in, you know, we come in and we, I view our role as really, the layer between technology and the business. So we do business analysis, project management, change management, test lead, just kind of those leadership roles that that wrap around the project, so that we're there to make sure that the project, you know, gets the ROI that's expected out of it. And, you know, I kind of look at the project manager as the conductor of an orchestra, right? So they're not the expert in being, you know, playing the violin. They're not the expert in playing the trumpet or whatever, but they know what sounds good. They know how the timing, they get the, you know, they get the cadence going, the rhythm going, so that people are delivering. They bring people in and out at the right time so that you get the result that you're after. So that's what we do. We come in and we help organizations get the benefit that they want out of these solutions. And the nice thing is I hire people who treat it as a craft, not a career. So it's something they love and they're passionate about. So they really understand what's good project management or what's good change management. And by doing that, they can come and they can find best fit solutions for the organizations, you know, because sometimes implementing Pure Agile isn't going to work, or using a ProSci model for change management, you know, end to end isn't going to work. Whatever it is, you know, we can come in and be like, all right, how do we tailor this so that we get the best results? Because some of those solutions that I just mentioned require an entire organizational change. And sometimes we don't have that influence, right? We have influence over the project. So how do we make this project most successful in the environment that it lives in?
So you kind of have a few sets of frameworks or a few sets of tools in the toolbox that you can come in and say, okay, what's the problem? And then this is how we can apply what we know to be true to this and kind of move this along. And I think to your point, you know, you walk into a business and they're really good at, you know, for us, say we're really good at dealing with locks and security products, but maybe figuring out a way to implement this complete new process is not our strong suit. And so it may take us a year to do it, where you might be able to bring a good project manager in from the outside and do it in half the time. And people are not as annoyed and frustrated by the process as a whole. Okay, so you basically are resourcing multiple different project managers, and then you deploy them out for your clients, and then they make magic happen.
Right.
Well, very cool. Well, this type of stuff is very intriguing to me. I think that you know, from what I've seen in our business and what I've seen in other businesses that I've spoken with, you know, there's a real need for these types of things, because a lot of times what ends up happening is you try to become an expert in the project management of implementing new processes in your business, and then it will detract you from doing the thing that you're good at in your business. And so that's a valid resource to be able to pull from. So very cool. The name of the business is?
Project Genetics, because projects are our DNA.
Projects are your DNA, and you can find out more by visiting projectgenetics.com. And then we appreciate all of your insight today. This has been a fun conversation, and really excited to have our first Australian guest. So that's, or at least our guest from Australia. So that's very cool. Jana, thanks again for joining us today. It was a blast, a joy to chat with you, and some great takeaways as well. Understanding exactly what the project is, exactly what we're trying to implement, understanding the gap between where we're at and where we're headed, and then understanding an analysis of how it's going to impact all of the different departments in your organization. Those are some great takeaways I think we can all be mindful of, no matter what the size of our business is, and how we can implement those as we're making changes. Thank you again for joining us today. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. We have a new episode coming out next Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it, so make sure you're subscribed. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time right here on the Coffee Break Podcast.